Welcome to Blether Together, brought to you by Farmstrong Scotland. I'm your host, Sarah Stephen, and together we'll be travelling across Scotland to chat to farmers and crofters to learn more about them, their businesses, challenges, and the positive steps they take to manage their well-being. Our thanks go to NFU Mutual Charitable Trust for supporting the podcast series and to our founding funders, Movember and the Royal Highland Agricultural Society of Scotland. How do you introduce Rob Wainwright, a man of many talents? Farmer, father, husband, rugby player, charity figurehead. Somebody who not only is incredibly generous with his time, but continues, in his words, to bugger his body for others. Thank you very much for joining Blether Together. I know you're a busy man, so we really appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule. So I just wondered what time typically the alarm goes off in the Wainwright household.
Oh, no, I don't want to talk about that. We'll have to lie and pretend we're like dairy farmers. We get up at 5 o'clock. Yeah, it's not really light until, you know, 7:30. Not 8, darling, 7:30 on call at this time of year. We're not early birds. So we have to be early birds. And it's lovely to be early birds during lambing. And when into the springs, it's such a pleasure to get up early. And it's such a nice time of day. But I have to confess, we're not the best at getting up in the morning. So
honesty is the best policy. Well, I'd just like to qualify for the listeners that Rob's not speaking to me when he says darling, just in case the edit's been cut, that Romaine, his wife, is in the room with him. So just in case. Hashtag. Anyway, I thought we'd do a little bit of an icebreaker, Rob, but start the podcast slightly differently. So I've got some rapid fire questions for you. Are you game?
Okay. I'm always game. Always
okay,
game.
Okay, so no repetition, no hesitation, no deviation, all those sort of things. So I'm going to go for it. Okay, I think you've really just answered my first one, which was jump out of bed or a bit of a snoozer?
Yeah, snoozer. Sorry.
Tea or coffee?
Now both. I've had both this morning. I used to be a tea man. I've been a tea man all my life, but cycling has brought coffee. It's meant to be a quick answer, isn't it? I now drink coffee as a performance-enhancing drug.
Okay. Always remember significant dates, birthdays, anniversaries, or sometimes suffer memory loss?
Constantly suffering memory loss, but my wife's birthday, our wedding, my daughter's birthday are all within 2 days, so it's all really easy for me. So
easy peasy. Okay, face cream or weather beaten?
What's face cream? Weather beaten.
And I can see you, so I'm not going to comment. Cardio or weights?
Oh, cardio.
Whiskey or gin?
Both, but if push came to shove, whiskey would have to win.
Cattle or sheep?
Cattle.
What is your biggest fear?
What's beyond the universe?
Favorite type of food?
Freshly caught fish.
Your biggest weakness?
Oh my God, there's a long list of them. Can I hand over to my wife again?
Okay, kilt or tartan trews?
I'm a kilt because my tartan trews have all ripped at the gusset.
Okay, lastly, texting or talking?
I'm a terrible man for the texting all the time. Sorry.
Big thumbs.
Yeah, big thumbs. Yeah. And my predictive text went off for a while the last couple of days. And I didn't realize how much my thumbs were being corrected by predictive text until it went off. These thumbs are not built for tiny little keyboards, but that's what I spend my life doing.
Yeah, they're good for handlebar as well. We better crack on with the talking since you're good at that. So I suppose the objective of the podcast is well-being, emotional, physical, social, mental, and, you know, asking our guests how they analyze it and measure it. And I think I'm at the age where I'm thinking about happiness and I'm thinking about, I suppose, what happiness looks like. And I'm rather morbidly, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this is the time I've got left. And I'm just wondering, do you do that analysis? Do you measure well-being in yourself?
Yeah, I feel good or I feel bad, but I do try and fit in time for myself. And again, my wife is in the background. She'll be judging me on this, but I do make sure I fit in because particularly with farming, it's an active job. The body has to work. The body carries a lot of scars from the rugby days. But it's kind of functionally buggered. It's not in great nick, the body, but it actually works. And I work hard to keep that going. And as a byproduct of that, it makes me feel good. I get a feeling of well-being from taking exercise. So just sweating away on the watt bike and getting all my muscles warmed up and just loosening everything off helps the old body, but it also helps the feeling of well-being and endorphins that are released through exercise, etc., etc. Whatever the reason is, it makes me feel good and it keeps the body going. So I find it very important, but you have to fit it in.
So that's the physical. I mean, I've met you a couple of times and you've always come across as a very kind, generous person with your time, and you'll always take people on, and you come across as super chilled. I'm just wondering, is that always the case?
At the moment, I'm not very organized and I'm spinning an awful lot of plates going into these big rides. And there comes times where I'm waking up in the middle of the night and I'm not chilled and I'm just trying to catch up with myself. But most of the time, I'm very blessed. I have a wonderful life. I have a wonderful family. I'm part of a great community out in the Isle of Col. I have a fantastic job. Life has been very kind to me, so I've got much to be happy about. But it does all pile up occasionally, same as anyone. And how does one get through it? Well, just works through it, I guess.
And in terms of, you mentioned the Island of Col, it's a beautiful place. I've been there several times. It's a wonderful community, a very strong community, but it's also quite isolated. And, you know, sometimes farmers struggle being in a rural environment that's not necessarily that isolated. I'm just wondering if sometimes, for all its positives, if sometimes it's, you say, I have to get off this island, I have to escape.
I almost feel I should hand the phone over to Romaine here. She'd have lots to say on this. But when the ferry sails by in bad weather and you've got commitments or you've got a treat that you're going off for, it's deeply depressing. But the community we have, I think people are far more isolated in big cities. And we found it with some of our family, our kids who were living in big cities and had nobody to turn to. Whereas in a small community like Col, there's lots of empty spaces, but you're never really alone. And you've always got to be aware there's probably someone watching. So whatever you think you do, go for a quick skinny dip. There's almost certainly someone. How there can be someone watching a population of 150, 160 people over 18,000 acres, I don't know, but there always is. And I think community is so, so important. Family and community and friends are the backbone of well-being, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose put you into the TARDIS for a bit and take you back to mid-90s, you know, height of your career, you're married, successful, you know, sort of medical career in the background and thinking, what do we do next? A pretty bold, gutsy move to Col.
That's the way we always, it always looked from the outside for us to move to somewhere else from where everyone thought was the norm for us, but we wanted to be, that's where we wanted to be, and we just couldn't be up there because my career, army doctor and with the rugby, kept me in the central belt, or you know, certainly in built-up areas. So as soon as that was gone, we had our plan and we just had to find somewhere. We were very lucky to find somewhere on the Isle of Col. Obviously, we didn't really want to live on an island with a three-hour ferry that only traveled at that stage three times a week through the winter.
What were the biggest challenges? And would you mind sharing some of the low points? Obviously, for you, you know, from a family point of view, but just even from an economic point of view, going out there and starting up a farm.
It was a big challenge and it was a steep learning curve. And I suppose the low points are when everything goes wrong. When you live on an island without a vet, and there's a cow with, you know, a hoof sticking out and you've no way of taking it out sideways. You just have to get on with it. And the successes kind of build your confidence. And then, you know, the failures hit you hard. Our first year, we got cast ewes in. And they'd come from somewhere where they'd really been well flushed. So they were all carrying twins, not that we knew it. We didn't. And we thought they'd be fine out on the hill through the winter. And, you know, we lost a lot of stock. It was a painful process for us, very painful for them as well. So, you know, there were bad times, but it was just hugely exciting. We were incorporating ourselves into a new bunch of friends. I came from a team background, and rugby is, you know, the ultimate team sport. And you're in a small, it's called a team, it's a community, and it involves the coaches, all the support staff, medics, wives, girlfriends, everyone is part of that team. And it's a hugely powerful thing if you get it right. And one looks at, we're starting off the Six Nations this evening, obviously last Friday once this comes out. And there will be teams that have got a really strong team spirit to them that have got it right. And there are those that are struggling. And the hard times are just the same. In rugby, the hard times are when you're struggling to make the whole thing work and things get a bit fractious. And it's no different when you're working on the farm. And it is, I know how isolating it can be out there, particularly if the finances are difficult. And I think if the livestock's struggling and the finances are difficult, I think a lot of pressure piles up. But everyone should remember that the best way to unload is to your neighbors, your friends, and they're all suffering the same problems as well. Their life may look wonderful, but they're going through all the same problems. And you can smell the berry pit. Well, you can't on the mainland anymore, but over with us, you can smell when things are bad on the neighbors' farms as you drive past. And you know there's dead stock, and you know there's been difficult times. And we're just there to support each other, I think. And when John Scott came over and talked about Farm Strong on Coal last early summer. Yeah, he was reminding me of the five pillars of well-being. And I'm trying to think if I can remember that it was connect. So basically, you know, it's the social side, connecting with people. It's giving of yourself. It's looking after your physical health. And I'm trying to remember.
You're
now.
Putting me in the spot because I should know them as well. And I'm not. So I'm just hoping that you might fill the gaps. But we better move on quickly.
I'm too short. I think it's so true. This word well-being, I think, takes a lot of the stigma away from mental health. People feel that showing a weakness, mental health is a weakness or a disease they can't do anything about. And I see it there's in rugby, the ex-rugby players, a lot of people wanting compensation or you know, wanting wrongs to be righted with the head injuries that they had in the past. And one feels for them. One also knows that a lot of the problems they have may be that they've moved from being in a really strong team. You know, it's a difficult topic to talk about. Stuart Hoggs, obviously been in the news recently, and he rode on our ride last year. He's obviously been struggling to move out of rugby, to move from that team environment.
We talk about, it maybe sounds a bit brutal, but I'm not referring to Stuart Hogg necessarily. Yeah. I suppose when you've been at the top of your game, you know, you can go from zero to hero quite quickly, but you can also go from hero to zero quite quickly.
It is. I think you've summarized what I was rambling on about really well, is that you go from being everything being wonderful, you're in the bosom of the team, and then suddenly it's all gone. And is it to do with concussion, or is it just that you're depressed because you've lost your support network, you've lost the reason for your self-respect, everything's gone and you're lost? And I think that's where whether it's in, you know, post-rugby or whether it's out in the rural community where things can be very tough, people can be very isolated when things go wrong. And that's where, you know, I come back to connect as a cornerstone of well-being is humans are social animals and we're so good at supporting each other. The first thing I love is notice. And when you're out in a farm, you're scooting around, you've got to feed all these animals, it's the middle of winter, there's not much to be cheery about. It's just noticing, just gives you that wee lift. Oh, there's the seagull over there. Maybe that was a bad example in farming circles. Or there's, you know, there's the first
farmers will be out. Up and uproar.
Exactly. It's just, however bad or good these things are, they're interesting. And I think having an inquiring mind and looking at stuff and wanting to know about it is, for me, one of the great joys of farming is constantly learning. And when you come to it late, I started farming when I was 34. But farmers are very kind with their time and their advice. Sometimes you don't want the advice. But when you're starting up, you're just lapping up all the advice you can get.
It's a bit of a cliche, but is there something that you do every day that, you know, you talked about being out on the farm, potentially the quad bike, you're surrounded by beautiful coastline. Is there anything that you do every day that just gives you that feeling of, yeah, I'm alive, I'm here, I'm in the moment?
I don't think my life is not that structured. As you said, I'm quite a chilled person and I career, you know, narrowly avoiding disaster. And I've got a great network of friends and neighbors around me. I get on really well with the farmers on, you know, certainly the farmers on around me, which is fantastic. And then having a family. We've got four kids, three of them are at home. The other one lives in Inverness when he's not out on cruise ships, living a dream life. And it's wonderful to have your family near you. Family community, I just keeps going back to connect. It is, notice is wonderful, but connect is more important, I think.
And they're obviously, I know that the roughly the ages they're at. So you've got three boys and a girl, and what a wonderful place to grow up. But I bet there was challenges for them growing up in that environment, that sort of small town mentality sometimes.
Yeah, and when they move from there to secondary school, it is tough. And, and I was lying in bed this morning thinking of all the things I wish I'd said to them then, but I didn't want to be the kind of heavy dad, believe in yourself and it doesn't matter. People will be judging you on things that aren't important, like, what you look like or what makeup you're wearing or what clothes you can afford to wear or, who you hang out with. None of these are important. It's about being a good person, deep down inside and valuing yourself because your positive attributes and all the window dressing, forget about all that. It's about what you are inside. And that I do really believe that. And I never told that to the kids. And they did have a difficult time coming from Aranagar Primary School and then moving up to Glenarmon and trying to incorporate the kids. A lot of them came from very different background. I think prep school is a wonderful thing and produces a fantastic product. But then they move into secondary and they stream in with people from primary school. They've had a very different experience up until then. And life can be really tough. Mid-teens, boys and girls can be very cruel. And
Have
it
you
was
told
tough for the
them
kids.
what, sorry, Rob, to interrupt. Have you told them, you're saying you wake up in the middle of the night and you think these thoughts. Have you shared those thoughts with the kids?
Well, hopefully they'll watch this and they'll know. I don't know because I don't want to be the heavy dad. I am, as you say, I'm quite a chilled person and I don't want to lecture and pronounce and stuff,
But do
and
they
I'm a
come
new.
to you for advice? I mean, are you and Romaine, are you good balance of the yin and the yang?
I think we're very yin and yang. The kids will answer this better, but so no, I don't say it to them. They're not very intense children either that need chats like that. But I'm just the same as any other parent that we think that, and we want the kids to value themselves on their positive attributes and be nice people and forget about all the window dressing and the fluff that the world throws up that isn't important. It's about the person underneath.
I think that's incredibly reflective, and I think that's something I feel a lot at the moment because when you're in the thick of things and you've got, I have four children and they're at a certain age and you're just trying to get through to the end of the day to make it through to the next morning. You're not really thinking about, you are trying to give them the values and boundaries and this is how we want, we want you to go out into the world and fly, blah, de, blah. But sometimes now when they're at that stage, you're thinking, did it really matter? Should I have said this instead? And I think, you're a wee bit older than me. You've got a big birthday this year, am I right in saying that? Not that
I
far
don't know what
away.
you're talking about, but bus travel is going to be a wee bit
So
cheaper.
maybe there's a bit of maybe there's a bit of there's a reflective element to what you're saying and just at that time of life.
Without a doubt, but I think I'm only thinking what all parents think.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
I'm going, when we were talking about am I a chill person, I am going through in the lead up to what's happening next week, I'm going through the wake up in the middle of the night and a lot of thinking. And for some reason, I went down that stream last night. And anyway, it's nothing can be done because it was 15 years ago that I should have said these things. But
Yeah, well, we all beat ourselves up about it, but you provided an amazing segue into Doddy Aid and your involvement in that. And I'm just thinking as you're talking about rugby and call, and I'm not saying you're retired, but obviously Doddy Aid has given you an incredible purpose.
it has, and my wife is now out of the room, but I it does place a real burden upon. We've got three kids that are establishing themselves, a new wanting to set themselves up on the island. I should be putting a lot more time into them, and it is a distraction, but it's a passion as well, and she respects that. And it does take a lot of time up. Doddy Aid less so. We've handed Doddy Aid over to the foundation, Ian Fraser and myself, who got it going. It was becoming too much of a monster that that was eating into our Christmas and our family life. But we're still doing the rides, and the aim was always to do Doddy Aid 1 year and then we do a ride the next year. But we're having handed over Doddy Aid, we're able to do the rides, and the rides are hugely satisfying. They are a lot of work. We've got really good team. I want to particularly mention Finlay and particularly Mia from the foundation, who's just been an absolute rock, and everything I throw at them, they just happily get on with it, and they've been brilliant in organizing it. And hopefully it's going to be a great success. Hopefully that we'll have tailwinds and sunny days, and we'll visit some wonderful rugby clubs and schools, and 300 people on the road for 4 or 5 days. I think there's going to be some very uplifting moments. There's going to be some dark times as well. I'm trying to do the lot, which is a lot of miles to cycle. It's going to be long days, kind of.
And having been there before, you know what's coming. And I think it's interesting you talk about sort of removing yourself from Doddy Aid, but you're very much the sort of figurehead. Your face, your cycling shorts, your cycling trousers, the tartan, you're very much associated with that charity. And I suppose that gives you a new element of recognition wherever you go that you've got to deal with.
You know, the whole thing started supporting a friend. It comes back to teamwork and community. And Doddy and I always got on very well, and our international careers overlapped. Mine kind of was squeezed into the middle of his, because his was a bit longer than mine, because he started a lot younger. And we were both from a rural background, so we had a lot in common out with the game. So we really enjoyed each other's company. And when he got the diagnosis, I knew the man, I knew how iconic he was, and I knew how generous he'd been with his time to everyone he meets. And therefore, I just had this idea that this was an opportunity to really have a crack at MND, and the way Doddy conducted himself made fundraising in his name very easy. So, you know, it's all about Doddy and the doors that he's opened and still opens now. And it's just, it's amazing the momentum he's created. And it's been a privilege for me to, you know, help direct that, some of that momentum. But it's life's very easy with a guy like Doddy as your figurehead. It's a proper sort of countryside Scottish, let's not get too emotional and say how wonderful someone is, but basically I'm saying he was a wonderful human being, and it makes my job organizing these things really easy, because doors just open and people are so generous with time, money, etc. And you know, at the end,
brings out the best in people, doesn't it? It brings out the best in people.
It does, and it's just the whole momentum of it. I remember when the tartan came out at Lipton, I thought, oh my god, that is awful. And now I spend my life in it, and it's just second nature. It's kind of become the Scottish fan, you know. It's now unofficially what Scottish fans wear, isn't it? It's kind of incorporated itself into Scottish rugby's, you know, psyche.
You know, you think about a mammal and you think about what, you know, men look like in lycra, comment again, and then you add the tartan into the mix. I mean, it's a whole new ball game. Sorry, excuse the pun.
It is. You're looking stupid enough anyway, and when you cycle a lot, you become blind to what you look like. And if you're looking stupid anyway, you might as well go the whole hog and go really garish.
And I wonder if there's a connection. You talked about well-being and obviously being involved, and he was a friend and a you know, fellow teammate. But I wonder if there, you know, that well-being, people giving back, does, you know, it helps people to feel better about themselves.
Exactly. And it comes back to the five: donate of your time, of your money, or whatever, or give. It's just, you know, for every pound you give, or for every, you know, ounce of energy you give, you're going to reap tenfold. And that's the basis of the human condition, isn't it? Look out for each other. And community works because we give to each other. And those transactions come in many forms. The transaction I'm looking at is I'm going to have a pretty painful 5 days in the saddle, and I'm looking for people to donate to My Name's Doddy Foundation. I've kind of been sort of generic with, you know, what are we raising money, fundraising to get research to find solutions to MND. I've now got kind of a slightly, I had a really good chat with Sean McGrath, who's the scientific advisor and has been there for, you know, from the beginning with the foundation. And I haven't really had a vision of what a solution to MND, but I've now got, this is really exciting for me, and I hope it's exciting for other people to know what the solution is. And I've got two pins to it, and I'm not sure if I'm meant to be talking about this. And there's nothing specific here in terms of work that's going on, but the two things that we need is that we need to be able to diagnose people with MND really quickly, which is a blood test, so biomarkers. We diagnose people with MND, so we know they have MND very early on in their condition. And secondly, we have some drugs that slow down the progression of the disease. And then When your thumb's not working, MND is, you know, it's hanging over you, but MND doesn't really impinge upon your life. You can talk, you can act, you're not locked in your body like they become later on in the disease. And if you can halt it at that stage, so you've got a dodgy thumb, and hold people there, then I really see hope and a future for people with MND. And that, just that chat with Sean McGrath was very powerful for me to actually be able to envisage how we can find a solution to MND.
It's amazing what you are doing and about to do, and the millions that you have helped to raise. Rob, you're very humble about the whole, your efforts. Can you just, in a sort of synopsis, just briefly tell people what's happening, how they can get involved over the next few days? Because this is obviously going out, hopefully, in real time.
Yes, so we set off tomorrow. There's a core team, which is myself, Mark Bowman, he knows how to ride a bike, Gordon Darcy, he's not quite as streamlined, but a very powerful chap representing us from Ireland, a couple of friends, Tom Davis, a Kiwi neighbour of mine who farms, and then Angus Thompson, who's a friend of Mark's. And we're being joined by Kathy for a while. We've been joined by Heather Stanning. I think we're doing something with Chris Hoy when we get to Murrayfield at the very end of it all. But that's us, the core team. We've got a great team of looking after us. We're starting in Dublin. A few of the teams, there's 28, 30 teams taking part. Maybe four or five are starting in Dublin. Most are meeting us in Stranraer. We're starting Tuesday morning. They're all starting Wednesday morning. We're then cycling just from Stranraer to Edinburgh, but we're taking a very, very bad route, which involves going to Ayr initially via Kelso, and then we go up right the way over Glenshee. We hope the weather's clear. We stop at Balmoral, where one of the staff at Balmoral, a lovely chap, has recently been diagnosed. So there's a team from all the staff at Balmoral Castle, and then down to Aberdeen, Angus, Fife, and back to Edinburgh. There'll be 300 of us on the road. We're stopping at about 25 different places. How can people help? They can go to a link. Anyone they know who's taking part and who's got a Just Giving page, please just donate. Come and meet us at the stops. Come and wave at us if we're going past.
Do what they can.
Do what they can, exactly.
Do what they can. Well, you're still smiling despite them 40 minutes of having to share your feelings and all matters well-being. I just wonder if you've got some sort of do you have advice for, you know, people living in rural environments, people out there struggling with their well-being? What would you say to them?
Something I've been thinking about, and I don't know if I can word it right, but I'm dealing with people with MND, and I've known quite a lot, and I know a lot at the moment, and their choice is removed from them to do the things that we can do. Health is just such a blessing. Do not take it for granted. If you can do stuff, do it. If you don't use it, you lose it. So fight aging by just keep your body going and do stuff. And it doesn't need to be the stuff that I'm doing or the stuff that other people are doing. It doesn't have to be wonderful or notable. Just going for a walk, look after your health, because you only get it once. And it's a privilege that people with MND don't have, and make use of that privilege. And it will make you feel so much better in terms of your physical health, in terms of the longevity of you being able to do your farm jobs, and it'll help your mental health, your well-being.
Well, there's nothing more I can really add to that, Rob, apart from you look desperate for a proper cup of coffee and to go and join your wife, Romaine, and get on with the day, and don't be too stressful about the next couple of days. But thank you very much for your time. As always, it's a pleasure and a joy to listen to you and speak to you.
Well, thank you, Sarah, and it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, and I'm not at all stressed. Look at me, I'm relaxed as anything. So
totally chillaxed.
We hope you enjoyed today's blether and it has provided some inspiration for your own well-being. One small step can make a big impact. Find something that works for you. To read our latest stories and news, download our resources and tools, or connect with Farmstrong Scotland, visit our website, allthews.farmstrongscotland.org.uk, or follow us on social media.